You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
There's so many people in need right now. Obviously, this is such an unprecedented time and such uncharted territory. And I know that we're all, I think, as a country, trying to figure it out as we go along.
Adam Silver, Mark Tatum, his deputy commissioner, the top 100 earners from all over the world, mostly in Manhattan at the league office, but in other posts around the globe, they are all going to take 20% off of their salaries moving forward through this crisis.
This was a big concession from owners, but one that they wanted to make because they understood if Major League Baseball is seen as the sport that is bickering amid this crisis, it is a terrible, terrible look. And in the end, they feel like they gave something up. The union feels like it gave something up. And they forged a deal, and a deal that allows them to now look forward and figure out what a schedule is going to look like.
And now, broadcasting from his roof or his car, these days there's really no way to be sure, Todd Lebo.
Right you are, Curtis, except I'm actually at the studio. We're all separate. We're all separate
boring.
Here. Sarin Petro off today. Todd Lebo in studio. Jed Marshall behind the glass. Curtis Siebold, parts unknown. So we are all socially distant and separating, as we are supposed to do. But what we're also supposed to do is continue on doing some sports radio for you. And we don't have sports, but there is some sports news. You heard it in the open there. A lot of kind of that, the details, I guess, as it were, that are going to go around all of the ripples, like you throw a rock in the pond and the ripples go. Mm-hmm. The rock in the pond is the coronavirus, and then the ripples were not having games for a while. And now the rest of the ripples are kind of going out. How will we have games? What will they do? How will we deal with a union? What will we do with salaries? What will we do with the Major League Baseball draft that's coming up? The National Football League draft? There's a lot of stuff to still get ironed out because, as we've said many times, we're still in this. This is not the end of what's going on with this virus around the world, especially here in America. So there's going to be news that happens, and we're going to bring it to you the best way we can as we move forward here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks so much for listening to us. I know that many of you don't know if it's Monday, Saturday, Friday. I don't know. We're still kind of on the Monday through Friday thing because we're coming here to work, but it's a little bit weird. It has been an odd couple of weeks for sure. I'm at least happy we still kind of feel like Monday through Friday here.
Yeah. It's although they say with the new normal, this is the new abnormal. It's not normal at all, but it is the new. So
yeah, we're in the middle of this. This isn't the normal. There will be a new normal that comes out of this. I can remember back when 9/11 happened, and there was a whole bunch of stuff for a few days that was not the new normal, but it was new. New normal turned out to be after that, and about that Richard Reed guy. The new normal turned out you take your shoes off at the airport. The new normal turned out harder to get into sporting events and to public buildings and all that. That's what it was. But right now, this is not the new normal. We're in the transition of whatever. Yeah. There will be some. If the new normal turns out that we all wash our hands more and do stuff, that'll be great. But if the new normal is we don't ever gather in a crowd, I won't be very happy with that. But no, we'll see. We've got a ways to go.
And with 9/11, I mean, you knew right away for the vast majority of the population what it was going to be fairly quickly. We're still figuring this out. That it's we still have weeks at least until we know when the new normal might even begin. So this is a much more of a transition stage, and with a lot more at stake probably for the vast majority than as serious as 9/11 was. For the most part, the tragedy was behind us. Now we're still in the middle of it. We don't even know what the scope of it is. But as we've said a number of times on this show, this is we are a resilient people, and we will get to the other side of it. We just don't know when that is or where it is.
Yeah, normal doesn't last very long anymore. And normal used to last a little longer. Normal didn't last very long now. I mean, it's just the little silly things like, they made the 3-point shot further in college basketball. So the normal thing you thought you did, you didn't do. We were talking off the air about different college basketball games. We're replaying. We got some fun stuff coming up tonight. The 1983 National Championship game is going to be the Westwood One call on Sports Radio 810. There was no shot clock or three-point line, or the clock didn't stop when the ball went through the hoop in the last minute. I mean, that was normal back then. Well, the normal changes all the time. So whatever normal is going to be for our lives constantly changes. Yep. You know, the new normal now is you wake up and you check Twitter or Facebook to see what's going on. That was not the normal that you and I woke up with, because we didn't have those things. So,
no.
I mean, normal is a moving target as far as I'm concerned.
We do what we've always done. We fold whatever's new into what exists, and it changes the way we operate.
Yeah.
That day, that week, that month, whatever it is.
And this has not been normal for us, obviously, broadcasting in a lot of different places, trying to make sure that we can still bring people some entertainment and information as we roll through all of this stuff happening. And we've adjusted. We've done a lot of different things here at our business. You know, not many people at all in this building. We're trying to make sure we're doing what we can to inform, entertain, and run our business the best way we know how to. So we're doing that for you, and hopefully you guys are enjoying this as you maybe work at home. Maybe you have an essential job where you're still driving to work. Maybe you're out there on the job doing something that's essential working. Those things have changed for sure over the past 10 days, 2 weeks, and we'll be here for you doing that the best we can. And today, we've got a pretty fun show. It's packed up pretty well. Later this hour, we'll hear from Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports. A lot of things happening with the NCAA. NCAA yesterday, we had Bob Bowlesby conference call talking about the amount of money that is now not coming into the Big 12 because of the fact that the Big 12 term didn't happen, and the NCAA money is going to be much, much less than they would have anticipated, how they're going to deal with that stuff. So we'll talk to him about that. We've got Danny unleashed, but we have leashed him because he's not going to be in studio. He'll be on the phone because we're going to keep ourselves socially distant. So we'll have Danny Klinkscale on to talk about that. And we'll also, I'm sure, hit on what's going on with Major League Baseball, the new rules they're going to put in place for the draft. The National Football League at this point still choosing to have a draft on the dates they had chosen, but it won't be the big celebration that they had before. We'll talk to Danny about that. We'll go around the country on the drill. We will talk to Adam Teicher in the 4 o'clock hour as well. The news, as you said there in the Sports Center, Curtis, Reggie Ragland is signed. He's moving on. For myself, I say good for Reggie. You got a contract somewhere else. I thought he was a fine football player for the Chiefs, but he's not the linchpin of what's going to make this football team be great. You know, so it's good for Reggie. He got a ring, and he's got a deal to go play somewhere else and have himself a job. So I'm happy for Reggie. We'll talk to Adam Teicher about that. And then at 5 o'clock hour, we'll hear from Kevin Harlan, the voice of America, who has been silenced. Normally, he would be busy as all get out at these times of the year with the, you know, it should be Sweet 16 happening this week, the NBA going on, all those things will be happening. But we've got Kevin Harlan on the phone. And as you played the little soundbite in this is – peek behind the curtain, already interviewed Clint Bowyer today. We're going to play it in the 5 o'clock hour. This iRacing thing is intriguing. They had, like you said, over 1 million people watching FS1 last week, and they're going to have on Big Fox on Sunday, they're going to have this racing. A little background, iRacing has been around for a long time. There are people, it's like a gaming thing, right? You got a PC and some fancy equipment, you could sit there and race against all kinds of people. These NASCAR racers have been doing some of this for practice and you know, kind of training stuff, and some of their people at the lower levels of racing. Well, now they've decided, let's go ahead and put this on network TV. It worked out great last week. They're going to do it again this week. So we'll talk to Clint Bowyer about that, and we'll talk to him about the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl, because the last time I talked to Clint was at the Super Bowl at Radio Row, and he was as fired up as anyone we had on the entire week from Radio Row, because he was a true Chiefs fan, and he had the time of his life in Miami, and it went till late in the night more than once. And he will tell you his story of following the Chiefs and being at the Super Bowl. We'll do that in the 5 o'clock hour as well. Then we'll give it over to some of those games we have coming up for you. At 6, we'll have the Final Four game from the Jayhawk Network in 2012, and that is when Ohio State could not beat the Kansas Jayhawks, and Kansas went on to play in the final. We're not going to end up playing that game anytime, because that didn't go very well for Kansas, but this was a great win for Kansas against Ohio State. We've got that for you, followed by that 1983 game. So we're doing our best to inform, entertain, and give yourself something to kind of get your mind off what's going on everywhere else.
although they didn't win that game, considering who they were up against, that was one of the more impressive efforts in a loss that you could imagine, because they were so out. That Kentucky team was so good, and they were really kind of they weren't. You didn't ever think that they were going to win it, but man, there was never a moment until the final minutes where Kentucky could kind of go, okay, we got this now. They had to fight for at least 35 minutes to win that game. So
yeah, it looked like it was over, and then it wasn't. So
no.
That's what we'll do.
That famous shot, and it's of Anthony Davis. I think it's Tyshawn Taylor's shot. There's that shot of Anthony Davis going up, and he's blocking it, and it looks like his head is over the rim. And you're like, how did anybody score 40 points against Kentucky that year? In fact, the Kansas did score exactly 40. Wouldn't that say 40 or something along that when they played in the earlier in the year? You knew Kentucky was on a different level, but they had to work to win it. So. But that The game that the peak fans want to hear is the winner against. It was an exciting game too against Ohio State.
Very, very exciting game. So we've got that stuff for you. We don't have the regular March Madness, but we've got our own little version of March Madness. You're not going to hear any dogs, I'll tell you that. There's not going to be any stinkers. Sometimes you can have some bad games in the NCAA tournament. None for us. We're playing all the good ones, man. These are some classic games we'll be playing. So that's what we'll have for you coming up tonight. I do want to talk a little briefly about. Well, I will mention this as well. On the news front, we're doing our news updates. The United States House of Representatives has voted to pass by a voice vote this coronavirus response bill that everyone's been talking about for a couple of weeks. So the Senate passed it two nights ago, and the House has passed it now. And President Trump is supposed to sign it later today. So there's your news update about what's happening there. And another news thing that is going on for all of our folks around here, if you can help, Our good friends at the University of Kansas Health System and at Children's Mercy Hospital, they're having a donation drive. If you can help them out, we've heard so much, if you've been watching the news, which I'm sure you've been watching the news, about PPE, personal protective equipment for our healthcare workers, people out on the front lines at these hospitals and clinics and places. You've heard about N95 masks, surgical masks, all that. So here's the deal. Tomorrow, from 12 to 2 at 7700 West 143rd Street in Overland Park. That's the Blue Valley Schools Hilltop Campus, the big white building there near I-69 and 143rd Street. They're having a donation drop-off. Lots of companies have some of these things. They have these N95 masks. They're not just used in the medical industry. They're used in anywhere where, you know, you're supposed to keep whatever you're breathing in out of your nose and mouth. If you've got some of those and you'd like to make a donation, you can take them tomorrow from 12 to 2 to that Hilltop campus at 143rd Street. They're looking for unused N95 masks, unopened surgical masks, unopened hand sanitizers, if you've got some of those at your company, unopened soap, bar or liquid, either one. You can bring some old Irish Springs if you want. If you want to bring those there, they're taking those, and they've got this set up very well. You know, they will be socially distant, all that stuff. You'll drive up. They'll take the stuff out of your car. You're not going to put yourself in any danger helping them out. If you want some more information, you can find it online at jocomedicaldonations.weebly.com. That's jocomedicaldonations.weebly.com. We're also putting this up on all of our social media outlets as well. So if you can help, I've seen some really inspirational stories on the news of some of these companies that have a lot of this stuff, and they're finding their way to get it to the hospitals because that's the people who need it, and they'll take what you can give them. If you don't know whether they'll take it or not, take it and see. If they don't want it, they don't want it. Yeah. What else you got to do tomorrow from 12 to 2, man? You got some time. Go out there and get yourself in your car or truck and drop that stuff by the Hilltop campus there at 143rd if you can help out tomorrow from 12 to 2.
Is it Majestic? Who's the uniform company that's doing this?
Yeah, the baseball uniform. It's Majestic. They're making surgical masks and stuff like that. I saw that on social media. It's pretty
Fanatics.
Cool. It's Fanatics.
Fanatics.
I thought Majestic was the actual manufacturer. Who
we
was
doing didn't
it.
Need to know yesterday, Lebo. Maybe if you were listening, you would have.
Wasn't
known.
Curtis on Need to Know?
Yeah.
Well, he should have known.
I should have.
Anyway, there's all kinds of companies doing really nice things, man. If you can help out in any way, do that tomorrow. And we're seeing that, and like I said, they've passed this through the House, so hopefully some small businesses will start to get some relief. And I don't understand all the ins and outs of it, but I know that seems to me like this was something that everyone was behind. So it's nice to see things that people kind of can bring us together in some way to try to help companies, people who need things. And a lot of it, you can't wait for the government to help you with. So if you've got some of these supplies and you can go help out some of our local healthcare providers, man, do it. Help out the best way you can. So you can do that tomorrow from 12 to 2. It's a pretty cool deal. We'll see how that goes. One of the things I do want to talk to you guys about, we'll do this a little bit more after the break in depth. I was running through those numbers that Commissioner Bowlesby said yesterday. They're going to miss about $6 to $7 million from not having the Big 12 tournament. Okay, so that seems like a lot of money, but it's kind of small potatoes in the overall scheme of the world. It's 10 teams, you know. It's this. When we look through these numbers with colleges, you get to see how huge football is compared to the basketball. Like, if the reason they're having the silly Big 12 football game, because it's worth, I don't know, three times that, and it's one dumb game. So there's a lot of money in football, but the big money that comes out at this time of year is basketball. So the Big 12 missed that. The NCAA announced yesterday, instead of having $600 million to chop up with all the schools, it's going to be $224 million. That is a monstrous decline in what the Big 12 schools were thinking they were going to get. But one of the things that I thought was interesting, when they went through these numbers, Commissioner Bowlesby talked about some good news as well. One of the good things for the league was there were two teams in the college football playoff New Year's Six thing, right? So that's more money for the league. That was a good thing. Talked about there's some other fund that the NCAA's got some money in that they're going to get a piece of. But then it sounded to me like they're actually going to save, and this is the scary part for all these spring sports, they're going to save a few million dollars by not putting on some of these championships, like softball and basketball or baseball, some of these things that don't make money. And that gets you thinking, wait a second, are they going to realize this stuff costs us too much money? I mean, is this going to be something where they're like, maybe we're not going to have some of these things? I don't know where this will go. I think everything's on the table at this point.
Yeah, if they get through it and go, that's the fear with a lot of these alterations that are kind of forced by this, and things that are going to be pushed aside out of necessity, absolute dire necessity, that then just become regular. Because when something goes away, it's a lot easier to not bring something back than it is to push something away. You know what I'm saying? So. Yeah, it's the way everything that happens over the next 6 months, the secondary reaction to it and how it plays out in 21 and 22 are going to be interesting to follow. And I'm sure there will probably be some voices that will want to go that direction.
And there, you know, this NCAA March Madness money trickles down to the lower divisions too, Division II and Division III, and they're getting smaller pieces. Now, you know, they're not going to chop up. They would love to chop up $224 million. They only get, I don't know, these numbers I'm looking at, they were going to get about 40-some million dollars. They're going to get $13 million now at Division II. You know how much bigger a deal that is at Division II to not get the $40 million to chop up than it is for even the big schools to not get $400 million less? I mean, the budgets at these little schools, there's projections now that Division III will actually experience a deficit this year because of this, because they actually pass money down there too. So they're, and that's the basketball side, man. Forget about the smaller sports that aren't supposedly revenue generating. There's going to be things felt on this for years to come. We'll have to wait and see how it ends up going, but it's scary times for all the sports stuff. But as we talk about many times on this show and this radio station, the sports stuff seems like kind of small potatoes and not that important compared to what's happening out there in the real world. But man, this stuff is going to just continue to kind of ripple as we go throughout, and we'll see what happens. These Major League Baseball draft rules are going to be way different because they haven't had a chance to watch a lot of these kids play, and you know they're not going to be doling out $6 or $7 million to a kid if they don't have it to pay and they haven't watched them. They're going to cap these limits on what you can give them this year. They'll have to get the rest next year. There's probably a lot of kids out there who thought they were buying big houses for the parents or something this summer when they got their big money. It ain't happening right now. But like I said, that stuff's just not that important when it comes down to the rest of the stuff. But we'll see. We'll talk about that more after the break. We'll get your guys' thoughts on the NCAA and kind of where they're going then. We're going to take a quick break because we want to make sure we have some time to talk about that and hear from Dennis Dodd at the end of the hour. You're in the program on a Friday.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I know he means well, but he is quite possibly the foulest man I have ever met.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All you Trekkies and TV addicts, don't mean to this, don't mean to bring static. Come on. All you Klingons in your grandma's house, grab your back street friend to get loud, blowing doors off inches.
Welcome back into the program. I'm Todd Lebo. Soren Petro off today. Curtis Seabolt is not off, but he's not here. Parts unknown. Jed Marshall.
I'm a little off, usually, most days.
Yeah, a little off. Jed Marshall across the room, behind glass. We are protected from each other as we socially distance ourselves. Maybe this will be our new normal. We just don't see each other anymore. We could do that. I actually kind of prefer to have us all in the same room. You know, I've fought for years. Let's not have useless remotes, but these are useful remotes because it's best that we're not in the same place because it's just the public health.
All of the remotes are useful. They draw business to all of our great sponsors right here on Sports Radio.
No, those are useful, but sometimes we do some that I don't think are as useful. When we're out of the studio just for a different reason, which we're not going to get into all that right now.
Oh, I see.
When we're bringing you to a sponsor, those are as useful can be.
Thank you.
Sometimes not every one of them is like that.
I just didn't know what you were saying. Yeah. Sorry.
You understand what I'm talking about?
To get us back on track, a little bit of breaking news. It's been reported that ESPN's Doris Burke, one of my favorite analysts, has been tested positive for the coronavirus.
NBA analyst, right? So the NBA is kind of where of this, the first public stuff.
Shane came down here and more of the details said that she was working the Nuggets game kind of that was still going on when the world was getting shut down, all of the sports world. So there's a lot of thought that that's probably where she contracted it.
It says on this story I'm reading that she's been symptom-free. She found out Wednesday and she thought she got
already recovering.
Yeah, she's probably already recovered. Didn't sound like it. She had some fatigue and stuff. It didn't sound like it was a horrible case of it, but Doris Burke, had tested positive. We're going to see more and more of that. I mean, you can't test positive unless you take a test. So if you haven't taken a test, you don't know if you were ever had it or not. If some people had some symptoms
and made
it
through. And you can't take a test if there's no test. Unless you have symptoms, and at least at this point. So.
Or if you play in the NBA or some places like that.
You could afford private testing, private lab.
Yeah, we'll see where that ends up going. But what do you guys, deeper into this NCAA thing, I am fearful for some of these smaller programs at the lower levels that maybe they just won't be able to fund them. Now, you know, when you talk about sports like baseball and softball, they don't, when you look out there, if there's 40 guys on a baseball team, they're not all getting a scholarship. They're getting, I think it's 11.7 or something. It's like less than 12 scholarships, and they're all chopped up between little piece for everybody unless there's some really good pitcher somewhere who might get a full scholarship or something like that. But they take away a couple of those. That's going to have some major impacts. Now, this isn't major impacts on the world, as we said, but it's a major impact on someone's college experience, wanting to keep playing the game. That's the this is, more of the true amateur athletics that the NCAA was supposed to be about. It could be some major ramifications if this money doesn't come through for a lot of these.
Fewer opportunities to get an education that they otherwise wouldn't get. I mean, most sports fans don't pay great attention to games of in the lower levels of college athletics, but I bet a vast majority of them know somebody who, a family member or a friend or somebody who does play at that level in smaller schools around here and other parts of the country. Almost everyone knows somebody who goes to one of these schools and probably knows someone who, my brother's works with a guy or my nephew plays ball at some place. And it impacts individuals more than it does the fan base as a whole, if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah, and the other side of it too is on we're talking about baseball right now, right? So there are certainly players at Division II or Division III who get drafted and play Major League Baseball. Maybe if they didn't get to go play at least that level of baseball, they wouldn't get drafted. This draft is going to have less people in it as we go, it looks like right now, and the money there. The minor league baseball is shrinking, so they don't want as many teams. And they were already talking about shrinking minor league baseball for some of the cost reasons. Wonderful excuse now if you don't have the money to do that. And then, like you said, once it's gone, does it come back?
Well, you know? The other thing that when we were talking about the NCAA and you talk about the non-revenue sports, the non-revenue generating sports, think about the impact it could have on all of the people, all of the different athletes who want to go and compete at the Olympic level. Like if you're talking about swimming, track and field, things of that nature, that could, I mean, think about the world championships in those sports and the NCAA championships. So it's the whole dynamic is insane to try and think about.
It's almost too much to really think about all of it. And that's why one of the things that Commissioner Bowlesby was talking about yesterday, you know, and this right when they said, you know, the NCAA 2 weeks ago said, we'd like to give a year of eligibility back to the springtime athletes. And I'm like, well, that sounds great. That's a wonderful thing to say. But can you do it? I mean, is it even possible to just sit there and say, all right, there's thousands of athletes in these sports and we're going to give you a year? Because then you forget about, well, what about next fall when someone else was coming to school because they wanted to get that scholarship? Is there enough money in some of these funds, you know, to pay the scholarship? We hear about all this money rolling around these programs, but the sports we're talking about aren't the ones that generate the revenue. They're the ones that are taking from the big sports like football. And I just don't know if there's a stomach to just say, all right, fine, we can figure this whole thing out. It's going to be a complicated affair. And one of the things that people want is they want to know right now what's going on. Well, here's the deal. You got to hold your horses because ain't nobody going to know nothing right now about any of this stuff. It is going to take. There are contingency plans after contingency plans after contingency plans getting made, and most of them are going to get scrapped and torn up and thrown away because they're like, what if we started now and what if we did this? Can't. All right, plan B. They could get plan Z. I don't know where they're going to get to on some of these things because it's not going to be easy to unravel in any way at all. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll come back. Dennis Dodd might have the answers. He may not. I don't know. We'll see. We'll talk to Double D from CBS Sports about what's going on with the NCAA and where this is maybe going to lead for a lot of these programs in sports that are dealing with the outbreak of the coronavirus and how it's going to affect them for years to come.
The program with Soren Petro.
I want you to take your hand out of that bowl of Fritos, throw away your National Enquirer, and pick up the phone. Go ahead, pick it up. Talk radio.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into the program. Todd Lebo in for Soren Petro today. Jed Marshall's here. Curtis Seabolt on the line as well. We're trying to get connected with Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports. In the meantime, I want to tell you guys, you know, Major League Baseball was supposed to start yesterday, and March Madness should still be going on, and we're playing some classic games here and there on our air, and you look up on TV. We were doing trivia yesterday, Stump the Chumps, and they were playing the Tuffy Rhodes game on MLB right. Earlier. Hit three home runs and off of Doc Gooden. It was interesting to see. And so was at Wrigley. Did you see who was singing the Take Me Out to the Ball Game in the seventh inning?
I did not.
First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Wow.
Who they put a Cubs hat on. Did not look super comfortable in the Cubs hat. Harry Carey was still there no. doing the deal. So that was it was interesting. Then they showed a shot of her later. She's sitting out in the bleachers. Did not look like a bleacher bum. It did not look like she was super comfortable just hanging out with the folks out there. But it's pretty crazy.
Could she sing at all?
Yeah, you know, can anyone really ever sing when they do the Take Me Out of the Ball Game? You just kind of do what you do.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, Harry Carey was the most famous to do it, and he couldn't carry a note in the tub.
No, he couldn't. But it was interesting to see that one up there. So I was going to give you my opening day story. I know I've told this on the air before. I don't know if I've ever told this on the air to you guys in particular, but my first ever opening day I went to was 1986.
Real quick before we get too far, Dennis Dodd is on a call. He said about 5 minutes and then he should be free. So
golden. Cool. So 1986, my first day as a food vendor at the Truman Sports Complex, and this was Royal Stadium, yeah. The Fort Kauffman Stadium. So 1986 was my first day. I was 16 years old. And I went out there, and we'd received a little bit of training about what we were supposed to do as a food vendor. I was number 95 on the seniority list. I went through, and they called us out one by one. And I ended up getting...
And there were only 87 people, which was kind of weird.
There was 40,000 people there because they were getting the rings from the World Series. year before, right? So this is
I mean 87 employees, and you were number 95.
No, there was about 120. There were so many vendors, it wasn't even funny because I mean it's the hottest thing in the world, right?
Yeah.
So
I
go out there and I go through, and the way it worked is you chose an item to sell. All the good stuff had already been taken by the time number 95 got through. So I see this thing. It's a little card. You pick it up. It's hot dogs. I mean, it's downstairs, and that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to get on the first day to be on the steep stairs upstairs, whatever. So I grabbed the hot dog card. I go up, and they check my uniform in. They give me that. I walk up to the little commissary room on the left field side of down in the bowels there, room 107 it was called, and I had my little tin hot dog tickets, and I go in there, and they set me up with this great big metal box with the – this was the big hot dog. One side, you open it up, and there's hot dog water full of hot dogs and a Sterno underneath it. The other side, there was a I guess there were three packages of buns. There were 24 buns, right? So you had to unwrap the bun package, had the little wax paper things. You had ketchup. Oh, yeah. You had mustard. You assembled the hot dog for the person, right? So I walk out there, they're getting the rings, and I'm out there, and I'm like, hot dogs? Who wants a hot? I don't even have a yell yet. I'm 16. I don't know what I'm doing. I go walking down the middle aisle, and I'm walking towards GA. And I get up down there, and no one's stopping me. And the game is getting close to starting because it took me so long to get through. And I go walking up the aisle, the GA aisle, up by the pole there, and I was going to walk up, and I get about halfway up, and the person to the right, about 10 people in, says, hot dog man, two hot dogs. I said, all right. Hot stuff. I'm going to make some hot dogs up here. So they said, you want ketchup or mustard? They said, mustard, right? So I make up the hot dog and I pass it down. I'm making the other one up. Right about the time I'm getting ready to pass it down, the hot dog I had made is coming back. And it says, can we have one without a hair in it? And there was this monstrous black hair that was not mine. It was on the hot dog and in the mustard.
Oh. Oh, no.
And I'm like, sure, yeah, absolutely no problem. So I make him a new one.
No, you have to take that one.
So I have that one, and it's down. I put it down in the other side of my box, and I sell them those two hot dogs for $1.25 a piece, $2.50. And now I'm like, this stinks. This is my first freaking sale. It's got a big hair in it. So I'm walking up the stairs, and I'm like, hot dog. Now I'm getting a little more into it. I get to the top of the stairs. This little kid stops me and goes, hot dog. Can I have a hot dog? I said, yeah, you want mustard? And he goes, yeah. And so I just took that big hair off that hot dog and I gave it to this kid. So, because I didn't know what to do with the hot dog. If I took it back, I knew that if I didn't have, like, if you didn't sell it, I think they would give me another one. I don't know. But you had to have the right amount of items to sell and the money, because it was your own money at that point. They gave you the ticket. You got the money. You turned the money. You came up $40 short. You owed them $40. Came up $1.25 short, you owed him $1.20, whatever it was. You had to make the shortage of. So, yeah, the very first hot dog I sold had a hair on it. And then the third hot dog I sold, I had taken that hair off and gave it to the first hot dog. Does that make me a bad person?
Yes, it does. People think that you're this great guy.
I was 16, man.
The 16-year-old grew into the 40-whatever who sits in the studio.
50.
But by the way,
that's even worse.
That event was a harbinger for that 86 Royals team. It would not get any better. That entire season had a hair on it.
Yeah, it was not great.
Unfortunately, coming back. My nephew was actually at that game. He was, I think he was 10. He told me he got a hot dog, and he got it. He's like, it's got a hair on it. All these years, I've wondered how Chris got that hot dog.
The hot dog did not have a hair on it when the kid got the hot dog.
Oh,
I had taken the hair off. It was definitely off of it. But, you know, that's what happens. So I worked. You always would work opening day. I was not a school skipper. But in 1986, it was like, hey, man, you get out of school, leave school early. I had an excuse. I was going to work and go make yourself some money. So they told us that, you know, you'd probably average like $40 a game or something when you were working, right?
Depending on
what you sold, and you know, if you were number 95,
the guy selling the licorice rope is not making as much as the beer guy.
Well, the first guy who went through, he got probably, it was a hot day. He was selling Coca-Colas and probably had made $20 before I got in there because it took me that long to get through. Either way, so that first day I made $25. Okay, and so that was really good money for working for like 3 hours in 1986.
I mean,
it was the minimum wage was $3 and something. It was pretty good. I was as sore and dead as you could possibly be the next day. Because, you know, I'd mow grass.
Fortunately, probably an off day.
You know, I'd cut grass and, you know, exercise a little bit. I was 16 years old. I was young. But I had not, like, carried a big metal box of hot dogs up and down stadium stairs and bent up and, you know, my back up and down and all that stuff over and over again. I was like, this job stinks, man. I'm quitting this job. My parents were like, well, you're not quitting anything. So the next day I go out, I got to check the dates on this. So you remember when Dennis Leonard came back and pitched?
Yes. Saturday afternoon. Game of the week. I was working across the street at the Denny's that day.
So that day, it was a pretty good crowd. And I think that was the second game of the year, maybe. I don't know, a third game. It was that series, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So
Blue Jays.
I go up there, and now I'm number 95. And the only choice I have is to sell Frosty Malts upstairs. And if you back in the old days, if you would count up the number of aisles that were upstairs, the way they did the stadium, it was divided into quadrants. Home plate, left field, right field. You know, so you divided there. If you were in the upper deck right field, you weren't supposed to go on the left field side of home plate, right? And then so each aisle. So there was something like, I don't know, 11 aisles up there on that quarter, on that quarter of the stadium. I think there were like 12 malt vendors. So you couldn't go up down an aisle without running over a competition. It was awful. I made like $8 that day. I'm like, I got a long ways to go to get myself.
But you saw a great game, you know.
I did. It was really cool that he pitched well, but I'm like, this average ain't going to work for me, man. I'm going down on this thing. I am not getting any better at this. And then eventually, you know, you would just grind your way through it and get through. And then eventually attrition happened. So the people quit who had not been working as hard, or the guys who failed worse than I did early. And then all of a sudden, it didn't take me long to be like number 60 on the seniority list.
Ooh,
you know, and then it wasn't so bad. The crazy part about the food vending out there, I quit in 1994. The last day I worked was the day, the series before the Major League Baseball went on strike.
So Mariners.
I was number 3 on the seniority list at that point. I'd been there for 9 years. And if I went back to work there this last year and said, can I have my seniority back, I would still be number 3. In 26 years, I would not have made up one spot because the two guys in front of me were still out there.
Wow.
As of last year. So, yeah, it was an
interesting. What was your call? Hot dog, hot dog, hot dog.
I did not sell hot dogs often. I've quickly learned that was a hard item to sell because you had to construct the hot dog. I preferred to sell ice-cold Coca-Cola on the hot days, and I preferred to sell peanuts on the other days because those were the easy ones. Sell cotton candy every once in a while. And for a while, they had Frosty Malts were pretty good. You know, they would tell you before the game, they would say, we're expecting 27,000 people, and Johnson County 3-2 is in the upper deck. So you're like, hey, you know what?
It's a good day.
Frosty Malts upstairs. Every one of these kids got $10 in their pocket. You know, so you go upstairs and sell Frosty Malts on that day. And so you know, they would tell you where certain groups were, and you would try to go where they were. But I always opted for the easy way through, and peanuts were easy because there was just a bag, you know, and you could – there wasn't that much. There wasn't an operation to make them. If you recall back in the day when you sold the Coca-Colas, they came in a cup. It was a wax cup. So it wasn't like just a bottle. So they were – you get a little messy with those because they would condensate. And if you one of the cups got a leak in it or one of the lids came off, generally the entire front of your body was covered with the legit, not Diet Coke. This was like real Coca-Cola on you. Like my shoes, like those summers, you couldn't even untie them. The strings were so like tight, you know.
That's
opening day for you right there. But then I missed
more stories from a vendor.
The last opening day I got to work was 88. The George Bell day and the day the Jayhawks beat the Sooners. Then I was in college. I was always at college when opening day happened. So, you know, then I guess when I graduated from college and I had no real job, I would still do it. But, all right, we got a few minutes here with Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports. Hey, Dennis, how you doing? First of all, thanks for joining us. I know you're busy getting some of these things written and done. How are you doing?
Good. I apologize. I was on a phone call there and had a date. I'm good.
No problem at all. I appreciate your time. Well, that's been too long here, but I did want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on with the NCAA. I have a little fear in my heart here that the lack of money coming in from this basketball tournament and what may be ahead for some of these guys is going to trickle down. And really affect some of these lower level divisions and the less or the non-revenue sports. Listening to Commissioner Bowlesby yesterday kind of talk about some of those numbers, what do you think is going to be some of the fallout from this monetary stuff that's going to happen here in the NCAA right now?
Yeah, that's what I was on the phone about, actually. I was talking to a source about that. It's going to be a hit. Don't know how big. The accountants still have to get on it. But, you know, there's going to be a hit this year. And there's going to be an undetermined and bigger hit probably next year. Some schools have reserves that they can make this money happen. Some don't. The schools in general, the NCAA, that will really be hit the fiscal year in June 30th, by the way. So this came at the end of the fiscal year. But schools that get a significant amount of institutional support, really in the form of student fees, you know, those things in the tuition or
right.
student fee. There's a lot of schools, not so many in the Big 12, but especially in the Group of Five, and some of them especially where Sun and MAC, where if football goes away, I think it might impact some of those schools that have football programs, but that's looking way into the future.
Yeah, one of the things when the commissioner went through the numbers yesterday on that call, he said, it's $6 million here. You know, it's going to be not 600, it's $224 million divided up. And then he said there was some good news, and he mentioned that the college football playoff, there were two, you know, New Year's Bowl teams in the Big 12. And then he said, and there was a savings from not hosting championships, like, you know, having a baseball tournament. Those are money losers.
Yeah.
So then I'm like,
wait
a second, are they going to find out that's a savings not to have those things? Would they just be just like, maybe we don't need to have this sport? I think those things, about anything's on the table right now.
Well, and after March 12th, when everything was canceled, basically, they were going to save on travel. I mean, it's just money walking out the door when you travel the baseball team or the volleyball team or equestrian or whatever. That's bleeding. You save on that. But I think you raise a good point, to the point that, look, if they're getting by doing this now, you know what? I already talked to a coach about this in the Big 12. I go, you know what? This is a template for somebody saying, why do we even need spring practice? You know, student athlete welfare, it costs this and that, blah, blah, blah. They don't get injured. You guys are going to be fine. You know, if you start in August, say, why do we even need to have that? You know, so I think some of that could be on the table as we go forward. It's almost like this situation where people being laid off, you know, the economy may improve and we defeat the virus, but there's a certainty that these businesses hire these people back.
Yeah, and you know, Iowa State dropped baseball 20 some years ago, and they've been fine. And maybe they're like, maybe we don't need this stuff. There's going to be a lot of things that go a long way. Before we let you go, Dennis, I do want to ask you. I saw that yesterday, Kirk Herbstreit said he'd be surprised if there was even football at all this fall. I'm not there yet. Are you there, where you're worried about whether or not they'll play at least a very close to full Power Five college football season this year?
I'm worried about it. I'm worried about, being impacted because, again, the basics say we haven't reached the point of this thing. And flattening the curve means there are going to be less cases, but the actual situation lasts longer. And so I talked to a doctor today. I just called him and said, you know, at what point is this safe? If we decide to play, what does it mean if there's even one positive on a football team in August? He has to quarantine for 10 to 14 days. Everybody he's been in touch with has to quarantine for that long. All of a sudden, you can't field a football team. So it becomes a really dicey situation as to when to come back. You know, do you just scrap, you know, and just say, hey, we'll wait till this thing is eradicated before we put anybody out on the field? Not to even mention 100,000 people in the stadium. So I think I know this. I wrote the story this week. People are starting to talk about it. And Kirk's voice was the most significant to say that. I quoted a sports law expert from Boston College who said the same thing, and some other athletic directors in the industry. It's being discussed.
Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports is our guest. And Dennis, one of the things that didn't sound like Commissioner Bowlesby was real high on was like, maybe playing college football without fans, because it would certainly be easier to play without fans. I mean, you know that, because if you just tested every athlete and you found out if someone had it or didn't have it, you could play. I mean, you know that, but you can't, at this point, we can't test every fan that comes through the gates. He didn't sound like they really, that didn't sound like college football to him. Sounds like to me like they would rather play with fans. Did you get that feel from him as well? They want this to be kind of normal?
Yeah, it's not optimal if you play without fans. It would satisfy the TV contracts, which they will, these ADs will go to the wall to protect. I even saw somewhere, I can't remember where, so they came up with the idea in January. But if you play without fans, you know, you don't have the ticket revenue, which is counted on a lot. You don't have season ticket money. You don't have concessions. You don't have parking. I guess you would save on guarantee money if you're bringing in these punching bags to beat up, but that would be minimal. But no, I think that just takes away from the game itself. And it's almost like it's a bad look where you're just saying, hey, we're just trying to make our money back here. We're not going to have the stadiums open.
And it's not a good look for right now. People, I would not want to be in the, you know, the part of the university where you're going out asking money from people, because if people are having and that's a big part of what's made, you know, as we know, most of the Power Five schools, the athletic department is separate from the university. I mean, they've got their own little, you know, business that runs that. So that runs on donations, and there's already been, you know, new tax rules put into place a couple of years ago that are affecting some of that. And now at this point now, this could be one of the most disruptive things in the history of college football, I suppose. How it's just gone up and up and up and up. The bubble may be bursting on a lot of this big money.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, I'd hate to be selling season tickets right now. I know at Kansas State, I think they pushed their deadline back a month. I'm trying to read my notes. That's public. I'm not breaking
right,
any news. But a lot of schools have. But you're right. And even with that all said, If you're a fan, how safe are you going to feel, again, going into a stadium with 100,000 people? You know, I know there's going to be some of that. There'll be rabid fans in the SEC and elsewhere. But I would almost predict right here there's going to be a significant attendance downturn because of that as we sit here 5 months out from kickoff, coming a season after we had the lowest average attendance in 24 years. So that's something to think about.
Dennis, thanks so much for your time. We'll be reading along at CBS Sports. You're going to have a new story up here pretty soon from some of your phone calls the last couple of days?
Probably not today. I'm still working on stuff, so maybe Monday.
All right. Thanks for your time, man. Stay safe and enjoy some time at home. You know, I mean, you spend a lot of time at home at this time of year, but I know you'd rather be out there covering some sports.
I'd be at the West Regional in L.A. right now. I think. On today would be the West Regional in L.A. That's where I'd be.
Today's Friday, so we know that much right now.
Yep.
Thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you
soon.
Thank you. All right, there's Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports talking about the effects and ramifications of what's going on here with the NCAA with the coronavirus outbreak that's happened. And we'll have to kind of wait and see where this all ends, man. The story is ongoing in lots of different aspects, no doubt about it. We're going to unleash Danny Klingscale next right here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question, sponsored by Good Sense, chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, how many times in the last 50 years has every MLB team opened on the same day? Brought to you by Good Sense.